Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
I have front-loaded the episodes here for September because I know I'm going to have my hands full with baby John Paul Horn. I put this episode together while we were still just a few weeks away from the little guy being born. I'm so excited. We have not had a baby in the household. Well, some of my children act like little babies every now and then. They'll always be my babies. But we haven't had an actual infant in the home for an extended period of time in over 3 years. So excited for that. But I figured with my hands being full, it'd be good to have some episodes on the deck ready to go. And speaking of children, you'll enjoy this interview I did with Dr. Gregory Popcheck on how to talk to kids about chastity. And by the way, if you're a premium subscriber at TrenthornPodcast.com, go to the podcast website, TrenthornPodcast.com. If you're a premium subscriber, I have bonus content there for you. A chapter from the audiobook Made This Way, I co-wrote with Layla Miller, which also covers some of these topics, is available there for you. If you want access to those kinds of bonus content, the ability to submit questions for mailbag episodes, to discuss episodes in the comments section, a lot of great stuff. Be sure to go to TrentHornPodcast.com, where for as little as $5 a month, you get access to this bonus content. Now, without further ado, here is part one of my interview with Dr. Popcheck. Part two will be up on Thursday. And today I'm speaking with Dr. Gregory Popcheck, the executive director of the Pastoral Solutions Institute, which is an organization dedicated to helping Catholics find faith-filled solutions to tough marriage, family, and personal problems. He's the author of over a dozen popular books and an expert on the practical applications of theology of the body. So, Dr. Popcheck, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
All right, why don't we get started? Just tell us a little bit more just about yourself and how you came to be involved in the current work that you're involved in.
Sure. Well, I was in a private practice as a just general kind of run-of-the-mill psychotherapist. And in 1999, I had my first book, For Better Forever, A Catholic Guide to Lifelong Marriage, come out. And at that point, I had started getting calls from Catholics who were looking for faithful approaches to marital counseling, and I didn't have any place to send them. So I thought, well, you know, I'll do some work on the telephone because of some writing I'd done before. I'd had a few sessions with people on the phone before, and I thought, well, this will be my bit for the church, you know, through 3 sessions a week or whatever. And within 6 months, I had to close my face-to-face private practice and have been doing exclusive telephone counseling ever since. And now I have 4 associates that work with me full-time, and we've done almost 20 books and programs, actually, when you consider second editions and all of that. And my wife and I co-host More to Life Radio, which is on every day at noon Eastern on about 40 different stations around the country.
Great. And in 2012, you and your wife, Lisa, co-authored a book called Beyond the Birds and the Bees, mm-hmm. Raising Sexually Whole and Holy Kids. So what motivated you two to write this particular book?
Well, actually, this was a second edition, a sort of revised and expanded edition of Beyond the Birds and the Bees. It came out in 2003 through our Sunday Visitor. And Ascension Press wanted us to do an updated version, and so took it over from our Sunday Visitor and re-released it then with all kinds of new information in it and sort of a completely retooled, considering the new research that was available on moral development in children and in particular how our brains make good, healthy, moral decisions and how parenting can help the moral brain develop to its full potential. So really the point of the book isn't just to talk to kids about sex or raise sexually whole and holy kids. It's really about raising moral kids. It's about raising kids from toddlerhood through young adulthood, and we do take that developmental approach, looking at each of those stages and everything in between, on how to make good moral choices so that your kids can do the right thing and be loving people even when you're not breathing down their necks.
Well, I think that's a good, definitely a good insight, because I think a lot of parents, you know, maybe they search and find your book online and their reason is just, oh no, it's time to have the talk. It's time to have the talk. But I think that your approach, what you say, and I really enjoyed reading through your book, just starting out saying, well, look, this goes beyond just the talk, beyond just our sexuality. In order to help to raise our kids to be good moral people, we as parents ourselves have to model that. So what are just some things that parents
often don't get when it comes to that regard, that they need to work on and modeling for their children even long before the talk ever comes up?
Well, you know, I think that a lot of parents really just sort of assume that everything's going along just fine until now I need to have, like you said, the talk, you know, and now I need to provide information about sex and relationship and babies and all of that. What people don't realize is that, and this is both a scientific principle as well as a position of the church, that sexuality really is the representation of the whole person. It's the way I communicate my whole personhood to another whole person. And so in order for me to have a healthy sexuality, I've got to be a healthy, well-formed person in every dimension of my life. It's not just about knowing the rules. It's about how able I am to relate in healthy ways to other people, how I'm able to be vulnerable in healthy ways with other people, how empathic I am, you know, how much I really reflect on how my behavior affects you and vice versa, you know, how really just tuned in I am to the need for me to use my gifts and talents to work for your good, you know, and to really sort of see that and look for, you know, be the kind of person that's looking for opportunities to do that all day long. You know, I talk about eight different qualities. We talk about eight different qualities in Beyond the Birds and the Bees that help a child, really any person, have a healthy sexuality. You know, qualities like, you know, faith, like responsibility, like authentic love, meaning working for the good of others, like joy, you know, and several other qualities as well. Personhood is another one where, you know, if there's any kind of deficit in any of those eight qualities, then you're going to see struggles with chastity, because chastity isn't just about keeping everything under lock and key until you say I do. It's about being the kind of person who knows how to be fully loving in whatever context you find yourself in, you know, how to be fully and appropriately loving in whatever context you find yourself in. So chastity orders all of your relationships, not just your sexual relationships. And so chastity is really about the formation of the whole person, not just holding myself to some rigid rules and white knuckling it until the wedding day.
No, I think that's so helpful. A lot of us, I think parents out there wish they could get that. I know it's not the most appropriate movie, but, you know, get the chastity belt from Robin Hood, Men in Tights, just lock and key. And that's all what it's about. But what you're saying is that by living moral lives that are oriented towards God, there's a freedom from that. And that's what's more crucial. So let's dive in a little bit into your book and some of the topics that you bring up. And for parents or those who are listening, who would like to read it more in depth, it's called Beyond the Birds and the Bees, Raising Sexually Whole and Holy Kids. And it's available from Ascension Press. So we're talking about this big picture, looking at how to raise children, not just having the talk one, you know, uncomfortable Saturday afternoon, but the big picture. And you begin talking about an acronym, RESPECT. So I really would like to go through with you each part of this acronym when it talks about how to raise sexually whole and holy kids. So let's go through RESPECT. R, realize what your child needs to know and when. So what does that mean?
Well, it's all about being sensitive to both your child's questions and perhaps the questions your child isn't asking. You know, I think we all like to think as parents, if my kid isn't asking me a question, then I've dodged the bullet another day. But, you know, we need to, as parents, to be tuned in to what's going on in our kids' life and what's going on in our kids' friends' lives as much as we can, you know. And that means, you know, taking time to really talk with my kid and having that one-on-one time so I know their heart and I know, you know, what questions maybe that I would have if I were in their position, and saying, have you ever thought about this, you know. If they're not bringing questions to me, then sort of delicately broaching topics in a way that you know, leaves the door open for them to ask follow-up questions without stamping all over their innocence. You know, there's a delicate balance there that I have to strike. But if I know my child, if I put the time in to build that relationship and that connection, then I have a pretty clear sense of what they need to know when, and that they have a sense that whatever they want to talk to me about, it's safe to bring up. You know, as parents, we often will say to our children, you can talk to me about anything you want. You know that, right? You know, and the kid dutifully nods and then proceeds to go off and not talk to us about anything, you know. And a lot of times that's because we just really haven't put the time in, that kind of one-on-one, working side by side, playing with them, being with them, just as Pope Francis likes to put it, waste time with your children. We haven't put that waste time into it. And that, you know, it's that wasting time that gives kids the sense of us and lets them know they can approach us about these delicate and sensitive and embarrassing topics and come to us honestly. And that also gives us the sense that, you know, they're not asking us things that maybe they ought to with all the stuff that's going on around them that I notice right now. So we've got to realize what our kids need to know and when, and then be able to provide that information.
But I think that leads in well, because sometimes they may not want to be as forthright about that when they need to discuss these issues. So that was R. E, elicit your child's thoughts, attitudes, and feelings. Yes. Now, why should we do that?
Well, it's always good to know where to start. You know, I actually referenced, I think, in the book, a cartoon that Lisa and I saw years ago. I think it was The Born Loser. And the mom and the dad are in the frame, and they hear their kid speaking off the outside the panel. And the kid's saying, sex, 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 sex. That's all the teacher wants to talk about, sex, sex, sex. And, of course, the parents flip out. And they're ready to go to the school and start, you know, bringing torches and burning down the place. And the next frame, the kid walks in, sex plus one is seven. Sex plus two is eight. Sex plus three is nine. So the point being, of course, that, you know, we often think the kid's talking about one thing when they're talking about something very different. And it's really helpful to get the lay of the land before we start marching in with our charts and graphs and PowerPoints, you know, to be able to say, well, you know, tell me a little bit more about why you're asking that. You know, how did that come up? What do you think it means? And if I could just ask those simple questions to get the lay of the land, so to speak, then I can know what my kid knows, what they think they know, what they're really talking about, what they need to know, and I can provide, you know, thoughtful, helpful information that, as I said before, doesn't simultaneously doesn't trample all over their innocence.
All right, so that was R and E. S, speak the truth. So maybe not cabbage patches and storks bringing babies. Is that where we might, maybe we shouldn't go?
Exactly. Well, yeah, and you know, don't hem and haw. You know, I think the thing is that we need to really show our kids that our faith isn't so weak that it can be blown away by a direct conversation about sex. You know, we tend to get so intimidated by these discussions, and we send the message, the unconscious and inadvertent message to our children that, first of all, it's not safe to talk to us, you know, because they don't want to embarrass us. They're embarrassed enough as it is. They certainly don't want to put up with our embarrassment, and they don't want to feel like they've done something wrong in bringing it up with us. And the more I go, oh my gosh, you know, the more I make them feel awkward about it. And then also, since we're tying this into our faith, you know, it kind of seems like somehow the faith is making me feel awkward or embarrassed about talking about these things, when in reality, it should make me bolder to talk about these things, because this is God's creation. This is God's doing. You know, St. John Chrysostom used to talk about marriage and sexuality in his sermons, and people would give him a hard time about it, and he would say, you know, it's you who are calling these holy things unholy, and it's because of your own sinfulness. You know, he kind of let people have it right between the eyes. And so, you know, the being a Christian and talking about sex means that we're going to speak the truth. We're not going to be afraid to present what the child needs to know, how the child needs to know it, and not back away or back down from those difficult conversations. You know, we kind of swallow hard, say a quick prayer, and then dive in.
So I think, and as we speak the truth, that leads into P. So what we speak to them is P, present a positive Christian attitude towards sex. What are some of the bad attitudes even some Christians end up presenting that they shouldn't?
In a different book, Holy Sex, Catholic Guide to Toe-Curling, Mind-Blowing, Infallible Loving, I talk about two false schools of Catholic sexuality. The first one is the keep God out of the bedroom school. That's the school that says, you know, that as long as I say my prayers and contribute to the church collection, I can do whatever I want to do with my body. You know, so this approach that we take with kids would be the parent who says, you know, just don't tell me about it. You know, if you're going to masturbate, do it in your room. You know, and if you're going to have sex, then use protection. I don't want to hear about it. Right. So that's the keep God out of my bedroom school. Then there's the other school, which I like to call the Aunt McGillicuddy's antique urn school of Catholic sexuality. And this is the more kind of Irish Jansenistic approach, which is also not really Catholic, but a lot of Catholics think it is, where, you know, sex is holy with a capital holy in the, you know, sense of kind of its grotesque and gothic sort of way. And it's dangerous. And we, like Aunt McGillicuddy's antique urn, you know, we only touch it if we have to dust it, and then only once a month or so, you know. This idea that sex is somehow this mysterious, dangerous, scary thing that is bad, you know, if you mess with it too much. And the thing about either of those approaches is they're completely divorced from a healthy, integrated Christian sense of the body and why God gave us a body. And so, you know, it's important to really talk about how Christians really have the answer to what the world is looking for. You know, you can even reference, you know, you see a lot of stuff in the world, kid, you know, in magazines, on television, and whatever, about, you know, people wanting love, and they want connection, and they, you know, they seem to want it through sex, but, you know, they don't seem to ever be able to get what they're really looking for. And that's because we, as Catholic Christians, we have the answer, you know, for what they're looking for. And what you're really looking for is a love that doesn't fail, you know, that lasts forever, a love that's freely given, a love that's total, you know, a love that's fruitful, and a love that really, you know, enables you to feel better and stronger and healthier because you've experienced that love, not a love that tears you down and makes you feel lonelier because you've experienced it. And so we have the real deal, you know, and a lot of people settle for less, and the church doesn't want you to settle for less. So let's talk about how what we believe as Catholic Christians is a positive option to the world's unhealthy alternative. And I think that, practically speaking, the other piece of that is having a healthy sense of what sin is. Mm. You know, I just gave an interview with the Huffington Post before, you know, we got on the phone here. And one of the things, what are Catholics not allowed to do, was the question that she put to me. And I said, well, let's back up a second here. Let's talk about what Catholics are called to do instead. And you know, sin, I said, is settling for less than what God wants to give you. Basically, that's what sin is. It's a, you know, Augustine says, a privation of the good. But that means that you're settling for less than what God wants to give you. So sin is sort of like going onto a cruise ship, staring at the huge banquet they've put before you and saying, I'm going to go sit over here in the corner with my peanut butter and jelly sandwich and my glass of water. I don't want to have the banquet. Thank you very much. I'm good with, you know. We just settle for so much less. And so if we can talk to kids about sin in those terms instead of saying, oh, you know, sin is something that bad people do in dark alleys with Satan after midnight, you know, it's not about that. It's about God wants to give you so much, and we don't believe it's possible for us. So we settle for less. And that's what the world wants you to do. And so I'm going to talk to you about how to have everything that God wants you to have in love, and especially in sexuality. And that's, I think, ultimately what it means to present that positive Christian attitude.
So it's not the forbidden urn. It's not the dangerous thing. It's not toxic radioactive waste to carry in a hazmat suit. It's something beautiful, but to use in a proper way, which we will discuss here shortly. Right. The E, expect to talk about your own struggles when and to the degree it is appropriate. So how do we walk this line between being, on the one hand, relatable? You know, you don't want to be so unrelatable to your children, but on the other hand, not wanting to scandalize them. How do we walk parents through that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it may be just fine to say, you know, I had to learn this the hard way. You know, nobody ever sat me down and talked me through all this or showed me the truth about Catholic sexuality. I made a lot of mistakes and I got hurt along the way, and I don't want you to ever experience those kinds of things. And if they say, well, what did you do? You know, you might just have to say, well, you know, I'm just not comfortable talking about that. You know, I've shared those things with my confessor and I've been forgiven for them and set free. And those things need to be left in the past. But I want you to know that there's more for you, you know, and just like I want to give you the best of everything. And even though I didn't have it growing up, I want to be able to give that to you. And God's really shown me something that I wish I had when I was your age. And I want to talk you through how to do that, you know? And I mean, that can be enough. You know, in other situations with an older kid, you might need to get into a little more detail. But it comes back to that whole idea of, if you're building a relationship with the child where these conversations seem natural, which is really the hanging point for most families. I think, you know, most families really don't have a good sense of rapport and relationship. You know, they kind of think that family is a bunch of people living under the same roof and sharing a data plan. You know, it's what if family life is what happens when we're, you know, schlepping the kids, in the back of the car to the next important thing. It's not we don't take time to really get to know our children well. And so if you're putting that time in, you've got a rapport and you've got a relationship that gives you a good sense of how much you can share and how much you shouldn't share. But you know, you want to be honest and authentic, because I think that a lot of times parents are ashamed. You know, they say, you know, I didn't have this, or I made stupid choices, and they either buy into the, so kids got to be kids and they're going to do the same thing, whatever you do, you know, they're going to do whatever they want, or they fall into the kind of, you know, they like to pretend that they're saints. Oh, I'm perfectly perfect in every way, and you should be too. And let me, here are the rules. Follow the rules, and I'll go away. Don't talk to me. And they know that we're, you know, our kids know. They see through that. They know that we're trying to snow them. So you know, it's fine to just say, you know, look, I had to learn this the hard way. I didn't come to this naturally, and or I struggled with this particular thing, and I had to work really hard, and you know, God's really helped me through that, and I want to save you from that. You know, so even that's enough. But just being able to be real and honest about the challenge of living this out too.
So you're saying that this can be a helpful response, especially to parents who may have the attitude, well, look, who am I to tell my kids they can't do this or they shouldn't do this? When I was their age, I was doing X, Y, and Z. So how can I have the moral authority to tell them what to do? You see that this can be a good approach when parents have this kind of self-doubt.
I mean, you know, what other thing do we do that with? Like, do I say, who am I to tell my children not to be raised in poverty when I was raised in poverty? You know, who am I to tell my children not to be abused because I was abused when I was a kid? Who does that, right? I mean, but we do that when it comes to morality. It's like, oh, well, you know, I lived a completely dissolute and immoral life, and so my children should too. What? You know, really? I think, you know, we want to give the best to our kids in every area, you know, financially and temporally and emotionally. And spiritually and morally as well. It's not hypocritical to want to do better, and to want our children to do better than we did ourselves.
Okay, C, control your temper and the temptations to lecture. So how do we get over that?
Well, a big part of that, honestly, while you're doing E, eliciting your child's thoughts and attitudes and feelings, part of that is to buy yourself some time. Because you're listening to them talk, but you're also taking some deep breaths and you're calming yourself down and you're offering up that little prayer, because initially what we want to do, that anxiety that comes over us around these topics, makes us want to just kind of go off to the races and start, you know, nonstop prattling on about, you know, stuff. Or we want to shut down the conversation because, you know, I'm uncomfortable discussing this stuff. So, or, you know, a lot of times parents might walk in on a child who's masturbating or who's looking at inappropriate things on the computer. And then, of course, they freak out, and understandably. But you know, that tends to shut down conversation rather than opening up the doors to a deeper discussion. And so, you know, just making sure that you're focusing on the fact that this is really a process of discipleship and conversion, right? This is not something that you can fix by coming on strong. This is something that you have to address by coming up alongside of. How about that? And you can't come up alongside of somebody if you're coming at them with a hammer. You know, so you know, it's all about taking that deep breath and remembering that the Holy Spirit is the agent of conversion, not you, and not your words, and not your emotions. So you take that deep breath and you offer up that little prayer, Lord, you know, help me be who my child needs me to be and say what you need me to say. And then you kind of go in there. So talk to me. What was this all about? You know, when I came in and I saw you on the computer, what's going on here? You know, what are you thinking? You know, and it's really, again, going back to the eliciting your child's thoughts and attitudes and feelings while you get control of yourself, so you can come alongside and disciple them through whatever they're going through.
All right. And finally, we have T. So R-E-S-P-C-T. T is teach your child what the gift of the body is for. And I think a lot of parents, when they talk about sexuality with their children, a lot of times frame it as do this or don't do this. How is the framework of the gift of our bodies? How is that different?
Well, the idea that God has given us, I mean, this is a theology of the body, right? And that God has given us a body for a purpose, to do something with it. And what's God's purpose for the body? Well, it's to build others up. It's to communicate our love. It's to do those things that make other people's lives easier or more pleasant. You know, one of the reasons we take this broader approach where we discuss sexuality from toddlerhood through young adulthood is that, you know, you want to be teaching this lesson to your, you know, your early preschool children. And went, okay, well, you know, God gave you hands to give me a hug, and he gave you, you know, hands to help with the chores, and he gave you a body to, you know, do things to make life a little easier, more pleasant for the people around you, to do those things that help you love and serve all of those in your path. And you kind of encourage that through having a healthy attitude about chores and having a healthy attitude about looking for little ways to try to, you know, be present and attentive to each other, both, you know, with the siblings as well as with mom and dad. And you're kind of doing this all coming up along the way. By the time you hit adolescence or, say, you know, junior high, you're able to talk to the kid about, you know, well, what does the gift of their sexuality mean? You know, that, okay, well, you know, just like the rest of your body, you've been using it all these years to work for the good of the family by doing chores and by, you know, being affectionate and making the loving choice and all that. Well, you know, sexuality is about the same thing. It's about taking care of another person in a very deep and special way. It's about, you know, using yourself in a way that communicates how much and how deeply you're committed to and how much and deeply you love this other person and would never, ever do anything that would hurt them or would ever want to do anything that would hurt them, and that you're committing to always helping them be their best self. And that's that special gift that you give that person that you're committed to for a lifetime, to help each other become everything that you were created to be and help each other get to heaven. And so that's the ultimate way to give yourself to another person, just like you've been giving yourself in little ways by doing your chores and by giving us hugs and kisses and, you know, listening and being present, using your body and all those other ways that build up relationship all this time.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and be sure to catch part two of our interview on Thursday this week. Hope you guys have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.